Hi, Drew and Jonathan Scott here. American Family Insurance can help protect your dream home for whatever comes next. You can live in your own oasis or your own clubhouse. Whatever you choose, get the right coverage. Save up to 23% by bundling home and auto. Life's better when you're under American Family's roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies. 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
This episode of Food Psych is brought to you by my upcoming book, The Wellness Trap. Break free from diet culture, disinformation, and dubious diagnoses, and find your true well-being, which is available for pre-order now. Just go to ChristyHarrison.com/The Wellness Trap to learn more and pre-order for its April 2023 release. That's ChristyHarrison.com/The Wellness Trap. Welcome to Food Psych, a podcast dedicated to critiquing diet and wellness culture and answering your questions about intuitive eating and the anti-diet approach. I'm your host, Christy Harrison, and I'm a registered dietitian, certified intuitive eating counselor, journalist, and author of the books Anti-Diet, which is available now wherever books are sold, and The Wellness Trap, which will be out in early 2023. And by the way, on this show, I avoid saying diet culture stuff like weight and calorie numbers, but we don't censor swear words or other adult language, so listener discretion is advised. Welcome to this episode of Food Psych. I'm your host, Christy Harrison, and today I'm going to be answering an audience question about how to manage acid reflux without dieting or eliminating foods. This is really an important conversation for people with lots of different digestive issues who also struggle with disordered eating, which I know is many of you listening. Before I answer, just some quick announcements. This episode of Food Psych is brought to you by Chemists in the Kitchen by LabX, a YouTube video series spotlighting the power of chemistry and how science and food can bring people together. In each episode, real scientists walk you through things like making your own pickles, the chemistry behind ceviche, the formula for perfect homemade pretzels, and much, much more. It's a love letter to science, cooking, and individuality, with some great tips on how you can apply real scientific principles to your everyday cooking. Plus, it's just a lot of fun. Season 2 is airing right now, and you can catch up with every episode for free on YouTube by searching Chemists in the Kitchen or going to youtube.com/labxnas. That's searching YouTube for Chemists in the Kitchen or go to youtube.com/labxnas. This episode of Food Psych is brought to you by my second book, The Wellness Trap, Break Free from Diet Culture, Disinformation, and Dubious Diagnoses, and Find Your True Well-Being, which is available for pre-order now. The book explores the connections between diet culture and wellness culture, how the wellness space became a hotbed of scams, misinformation, and conspiracy theories, why many popular alternative medicine diagnoses are misleading and harmful, how wellness culture targets vulnerable people and ignores social determinants of health like poverty, racism, misogyny, and other forms of discrimination, and what we can do instead to create a society that promotes true well-being for all its members. Just go to ChristyHarrison.com/The Wellness Trap to learn more and pre-order the book for its April 2023 release. That's ChristyHarrison.com/The Wellness Trap. Now, without any further ado, let's get into this week's question. It's from a listener named Valerie who writes, "Hi, Christy. Your podcast has helped me so much in the past 10 months or so that I've been listening. I've made progress in my binge eating disorder recovery, but I know that I still have farther to go. Lately, I've been struggling with chronic and sometimes severe heartburn. I've had heartburn sporadically over the past few years, but it has gotten worse in the past 2 to 3 months. Most of the available advice to reduce acid reflux or heartburn is to lose weight and/or cut out certain foods. Considering my history with binge eating and weight gain, I'm in a larger body that has only gotten larger since the pandemic started. This quote-unquote advice is deeply unhelpful. I work in an office 9 to 5, and I'll get acid reflux in the middle of the afternoon. I especially get really bad acid reflux during exercise. I take steps to prevent this by taking the medication famotidine before my workout, but sometimes I forget and it causes me to end my workout early due to the pain. The acid reflux also flares up at nighttime. I have a wedge pillow that I've been using to sleep with my head elevated to reduce this pain, but again, this is only temporary and the pain returns the next day. I don't want to have to take famotidine every day to manage this problem, as I don't think famotidine is meant to be taken long term. Is there an anti-diet solution to this problem? Do I really need to cut out certain foods to manage the acid reflux? Thank you for everything that you do. So thanks, Valerie, for that great question. Before I answer, I'll just give my standard disclaimer that these answers and this podcast in general are for informational and educational purposes only, aren't a substitute for individual medical or mental health advice, and don't constitute a provider-patient relationship. Also, this is just my take as one dietitian and journalist, and I hope you'll seek out other perspectives and consult your own inner compass as well. First, I just want to thank you for your kind words and to send you so much compassion for everything you've been through in your relationship with food, which really sounds like a lot. I'm also sending solidarity as someone with frequent acid reflux myself, specifically gastroesophageal reflux disease or GERD. I was first diagnosed with this condition almost 20 years ago when my restrictive eating was at its worst, and unfortunately, I've lived with reflux flaring up on and off ever since. And I share that to say, you know, I've worked with many clients in all different size bodies who've dealt with this issue as well. And that experience has really shown me that acid reflux is definitely a condition in which higher weight people often get stigmatizing treatment, while smaller bodied people are more likely to get evidence-based care. It's just one of many ways our healthcare system unfairly discriminates against people in larger bodies, as well as those with many other marginalized identities. And I think we need to work collectively to change that. In the meantime, I'll share a bit of what I've learned from both professional and personal experience and from reading the scientific research in this area to help give you a sense of what's really necessary for managing acid reflux or GERD. GERD is basically just a more intense version of acid reflux or a more regular, consistent version of acid reflux, which is possibly what you're describing. So spoiler alert, though, there are definitely anti-diet solutions to this problem. First and foremost, healing your binge eating will likely be a key step in managing your reflux. When you're eating in a disordered way, that's often a huge trigger for digestive issues, including acid reflux or GERD. And scientific evidence shows that restrictive eating, binge eating, which is typically a response to restriction, and compensatory behaviors are associated with heartburn, acid regurgitation, and esophageal issues. Not only that, but regularly eating beyond fullness is associated with nearly triple the risk of GERD. Now, that's not to shame anyone for eating past fullness or eating in a disordered way, right? And of course, as I'm always saying, correlation does not equal causation. So we can't say for sure whether binge eating or eating beyond fullness causes acid reflux or whether there's something else going on that's, you know, related to both or that explains that connection. But there are some plausible mechanisms for causation, and people do often see improvement in GERD symptoms, as well as many other health markers, when they heal from binge eating. So that means healing from restriction first and foremost, right? And so given that you're someone who struggled with binge eating, I think it would be worthwhile to consider what role restriction and disordered eating may have played and may still be playing in your condition. You mentioned that you often get acid reflux in the middle of the afternoon, and that strikes me as something to investigate because that's a time when we tend to get hungry for an afternoon snack, most of us, right? So I wonder, are you noticing and honoring this hunger before it becomes extreme? And or are you on a recovery meal plan that has a built-in afternoon snack to address your need for a snack? Or are you pushing past the signs of hunger and trying to put off eating until dinner time? Because for some people with reflux, myself included, putting off meals and snacks for too long can result in increased acid production and trigger a flare-up. So it's definitely worth exploring whether your reflux might actually be a sign that you've gone too long without eating. And if you find that that is the case, you can work on stopping that restriction and allowing yourself to eat and eat enough to really satisfy you in the afternoons. Similarly, you mentioned that your reflux gets worse when you exercise. And that could potentially happen no matter how vigorously or gently you're moving your body. But researchers and clinicians have long observed that reflux is more common with strenuous exercise. So I'm wondering if your experience of reflux while working out is possibly a signal that maybe you're overdoing it, and if trying some less intense forms of movement could be helpful. It's great that you're listening to your body and stopping workouts if you're in pain. That's amazing. And I think, you know, it might feel even better not to have the pain in the first place, right? So in addition to potentially reducing the intensity of your physical activity, you could also try maybe having a meal or snack a few hours beforehand. Probably not more than 3 to 4 hours beforehand, because then you could get overly hungry, as we just discussed, but enough time beforehand to digest before your workout and see if that reduces reflux compared to eating closer to the workout. It sounds like you're reluctant to start cutting out foods, and I think that's a great instinct. You know, it's really tricky to try to restrict specific foods when you're in the throes of disordered eating and or in the process of recovery, even in like further along in recovery in many cases. So I wouldn't recommend trying to avoid particular foods as a first line acid reflux treatment for anyone in this position. And honestly, that's probably most people who are listening to this podcast, if not most people in general, right? But the good news is that cutting out foods for reflux reduction may not be necessary anyway. The scientific evidence is quite mixed and limited. We're going to link to a bunch of this scientific research in the show notes here for anyone who's interested. But I think it's important to know that, you know, despite what the internet says and social media influencers might say about the need to cut out foods for managing reflux, the scientific evidence really isn't there to support a lot of those claims. You know, as my doctors have told me, different individuals may notice that particular foods seem to aggravate their reflux, but there are only a few truly evidence-based interventions, and they don't really have much to do with food, right? So they largely revolve around physical positioning. There's elevating the head of the bed or using a wedge pillow, like you mentioned. I personally use a wedge pillow and then another pillow on top because the wedge pillow isn't quite high enough for me, and I think a lot of wedge pillows aren't really high enough to get your head like where it needs to be and where it's comfortable too. So you might consider doing that. Trying your best not to lie down less than 2 hours after eating your last meal or snack of the day. Of course, that's, you know, needs to be flexible and not a rigid rule, right? Because especially if you're in recovery from disordered eating, that can start to feel really compulsive or rigid, and we don't want that. But, you know, doing your best and having that be a loose sort of thing to aim for, potentially. Avoiding strenuous activity or inversions like going upside down in yoga too close to a meal or snack. And then avoiding tight clothing that can constrict the abdomen. And that last one might be particularly relevant for you, Valerie, because often people who struggle with disordered eating are reluctant to go up in clothing size as they gain weight. And you mentioned that you've gained weight. But the truth is that trading out those too tight clothes for more comfortable, loose-fitting ones can make a huge difference in digestive conditions, not to mention in overall comfort and well-being. So that's something to really think about if you haven't explored that already. Similarly, I wouldn't recommend attempting weight loss for management of GERD or acid reflux, or really for any reason, right? Simply because we just don't have any known way for people to lose weight that is at once safe, effective, and sustainable for more than a really minuscule percentage of the population. And in fact, pressure to lose weight can lead to worse outcomes by triggering and exacerbating binge eating, weight cycling, weight stigma, and the stress that all those things put on the body. For lots more on that research, by the way, you can check out my first book, Anti-Diet, and I've, you know, talked about it in past episodes of this podcast too. So although some doctors prescribe weight loss for GERD in larger bodied people, and although some research does show an association between higher body mass index and GERD, I'd encourage you not to think of higher weight as a quote unquote modifiable risk factor for acid reflux or weight loss as a quote unquote solution. Instead, you might think of it of higher weight as something akin to a genetic risk factor for GERD or acid reflux. And there are many of those genetic risk factors, right? I have some of them too. And, you know, those usually can't be changed, but the resulting condition can still be managed. And then you're not, you know, futilely dieting and exacerbating your disordered eating. Speaking of managing your condition, another thing to try to, you know, work on management is stress. Research has found that for most people with GERD, stress exacerbates their symptoms, and increased anxiety levels are associated with significantly worse heartburn and pain. Again, we'll put links to these studies in the show notes. So finding ways to take care of your mental health and reduce your levels of stress and anxiety is another really essential tool for coping with acid reflux. And I know that's often easier said than done when living through a pandemic in an already profoundly messed up world that just feels like it's getting more and more messed up by the day in many ways. But to the best extent, you know, you can, managing your stress, I think, can be helpful in managing the condition. Finally, I want to talk about medication. So although the long-term use of some acid reflux medications called proton pump inhibitors or PPIs has been associated with the risk of developing other more serious health problems, including intestinal infections, famotidine, the one you're taking, is not one of those drugs. Instead, it's part of a less potent class of heartburn medications called H2 receptor antagonists or H2 blockers, which have been around since the 1970s and have generally been found to be safe and well tolerated. H2 blockers are associated with a much lower risk of adverse outcomes than PPIs, but in fact, both classes of medications can often be a great help when used for short and medium-term courses as needed for flare-ups, as an adjunct to other forms of GERD management. Antacids like Tums and Rolaids are another simple and safe way of treating acid reflux as it arises. But of course, check with your doctor whether they would recommend that, because sometimes those they contain calcium and they could interact with some of your other medications. And some people do use famotidine long term as prescribed by their doctors without any significant side effects or with minimal side effects that, you know, are outweighed by the relief that they feel from the medication. I'm not sure if you're working with a doctor or just using over-the-counter versions of famotidine at this point, like Pepcid, but I definitely connect with a gastroenterologist if possible, making sure to tell them that you don't want to discuss your weight and dieting or eliminate any foods because of your eating disorder history. So, Valerie, I hope that's helpful in starting to think through an anti-diet approach to your acid reflux, and thank you again for the great question. To submit your own question for a chance to have it answered either here or in my Food Psych Weekly newsletter, just go to christyharrison.com/questions. So that's our show. Thank you so much for listening. If you're looking for help healing your own relationship with food, grab my free audio guide, 7 Simple Strategies for Finding Peace and Freedom with Food. Just go to christyharrison.com/strategies to get it. That's christyharrison.com/strategies. This episode was brought to you by my second book, The Wellness Trap: Break Free from Diet Culture, Disinformation, and Dubious Diagnoses, and Find Your True Well-Being, which is available for pre-order now. Just go to christyharrison.com/thewellnesstrap to learn more and pre-order it for its April 2023 release. That's christyharrison.com/thewellnesstrap. To get full show notes and a transcript of this episode, go to christyharrison.com/296. And for the transcript, just scroll down to the bottom of the page and enter your email address. A big thanks, as always, to our editor and sound engineer, Mike Lalonde, community and content associate, Vinci Chui, and administrative assistant, Julianne Watasik, for helping me out with all the moving parts that go into producing this show every week. Our album art was photographed by Abby Moore Photography, and the logo was designed by Melissa Alam. Our theme song was written and performed by Carolyn Pennypacker Riggs, and I'm your host and producer, Christy Harrison. Thanks again for listening, and until next time, stay psyched.